Hi, I'm Herb Snitzer. I'm a photographer and I'm watching Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to jazz keyboardist and singer Nat Osborne, leader of the Nat Osborne Band. Their new album, The King and the Clown. Stick around. When the interview is rocking, that's definitely the time to come knocking around here. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of young women arguing about which they like better, Nat Osborne's whiskey-soaked voice or the way his fingers tickle the keyboards, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. Many years ago, one of my favorite assignments for what was then the St. Petersburg Times was putting together a special section every year for the annual Clearwater Jazz Holiday. All the featured performers had to go through me for an interview, and I had a total blast talking to the likes of Herbie Mann, Dave Brubeck, Richie Cole, and once or twice flirting with the charming Judy Roberts. I also got to know many of our great Tampa Bay-based jazz talents, including Fred Johnson and Gumby Ortiz. Now, it was always fun because, of course, while I loved their music, I had absolutely no idea what I was talking about myself. Well, it's many years later, and I still get a thrill from being introduced to new jazz talent, such as today's guest, keyboard player and singer Nat Osborne. Osborne brings a modern swing to his performances fronting the Nat Osborne Band. You're starting to see a theme here, Nat Osborne over and over again. It's kind of a joyous exuberance that is reminiscent in many ways of an early Harry Connick Jr., I think. The band just released a new album, The King and the Clown, and Nat joins us today to talk about his work and perform a couple tunes from the album. Nat Osborne, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks for having me.
Delighted to have you here. It's interesting, your music videos, which I'll point out can be seen on YouTube or on your website, natosborne.com, they make your shows look like a really, really good time. Is that smoke and mirrors, or is that true?
It's all smoke and mirrors. No, that's true. That's us playing live. That's a live recording. So that's, you know, what you see is what you get there. We did that. We went up to a loft in Chelsea and did an 8-camera shoot, recorded a couple takes of each song, and took the best take, and, you know, just put those videos together. So that's us. We had a real good time that night.
It looks like you have a cast of thousands in the band. How many people are there?
It's 7 people.
Wow.
The full band is a 7-piece. It's a 3-piece horn section with drums, electric bass, electric guitar. I play this electric keyboard back here, and I'm singing the whole time. So 7 people. And we do go up from there. At our CD release, we had 11 people on stage. We had 3 backup singers. We had another featured vocalist and organ player as well, so...
It's a lot of mouths to feed, Nat. A lot of responsibility.
It's a lot of mouths to feed. It's a lot of people to throw in a van and take on the road. But that's the band, and I love it.
I have to ask because your work is still kind of new to me. Is this a full time operation, or are you guys working other jobs? Are you making a living as a full time musician? You and the band.
I'd say it's. The band itself is not totally full time at this point. We're moving that direction, but again, it's 7 people. So the musicians are not exclusively my musicians; they play in other projects. But more and more, we're playing exclusively with each other, and we're getting busier and busier and busier, and moving toward, that's the goal. You know, the goal is to be, I would like to go on the road for 3 months straight, take these guys out, and but with seven people, like you said, it's a lot of mouths to feed. So we're doing, right now we're focusing on the Northeast and trying to get out west and out south a little more. And frankly, I've been going out with less than seven more recently, just because it's more practical. But
it is expensive. The road is not
it's
cheap.
Expensive, but it's worth it. It's worth the expense, because getting seven people on stage is a whole. It's a spectacle. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it is, and I wanted to ask you. I mean, this. I wondered if do you have this performance gene in you naturally, or is this something you've had to, you know, kind of learn over the years, or, you know, how do you?
That's a good question, actually. You know, I would say I consider myself primarily a composer and songwriter. So I'm actually mostly at home when I'm alone in my room with the keyboard writing songs. That's like. I think there are people who are most at home on stage performing in front of people. I love performing, and the older I get, the more and more I become comfortable with it, and more I enjoy it. But I think actually, it does come naturally to me, but it's something that I've had to, it's an art form, learning how to be on stage and learning how to perform. And that's something that I've had to learn. And I've had a lot of good mentors, and I've had a lot of good, you know, friends that I've learned from along the way. But I would say, yeah, I'm probably, to a certain extent, naturally inclined, but it's not my main natural inclination.
What was the best advice you got about being front and center, being on stage?
I think, you know, it wasn't probably just a specific piece of advice. It was more watching people. And I think the most important thing that I've learned is always to be in the moment. I have a tendency of, as a band leader leading seven people, I'm often thinking, oh, is the drummer going to hit that hit? Okay, is that trumpet player a little out of tune? Is that guitar player? Okay, he's got to take it. And for me, it's been about learning, okay, focus on only me, focus on trust the band, trust my guys, and focus on my performance, focus on what I'm singing, bringing that energy to my performance. And the interesting thing is I can notice like that when I tap into that for myself, that the audience is more engaged. And I know the minute that I'm thinking, oh, that trumpet player is not playing the line he's supposed to play, that the audience checks out a little bit. Mm-hmm. So I think as the front person, you are the medium. You are the conduit through it, the music kind of. You're the conduit to the audience. I mean, you're generally where they're focusing. I'm also lucky to have a number of fantastic performers in the band, so I don't have to shoulder the burden myself all the time. But, you know, as Nat Osborne and the Nat Osborne Band, they're comes with a certain amount of responsibility, I would say.
Well, I mean, let's face it. Anytime, no matter what genre you're in, if you're singing, the focus is, if you're lead singing, whatever else you're doing, the focus is on you first. The horn section, the minute that they start, playing their section of a song, because of course we tend not to see them throughout an entire song most of the time. There's that highlighted section or two or three. That's when they come into focus, but the rest of the time it's got to be you. So,
I think these arrangements, I try to get the horn players playing as much as possible, whether it's background parts, and often try to switch it so that so that they'll take a melody on an interlude, so that it does, you are kind of moving mm-hmm. side to side. I think that kind of keeps people engaged. I think that helps keep people engaged to a certain extent. There are times when it's, oh, horn section time.
Yeah. This is going to sound like a strange analogy, and I hope it comes across the way I'm going to intend it. But okay. I coach girls soccer. And one of the things I'm always telling the girls is that, it tends to be that the girls who score the goals, the girls who are up front, the forwards, they're the girls, a lot of the attention's on them. And those girls have to trust the girls on the rest of the field to feed them the ball, be in the right place at the right time. They can't spend all their time worrying about whether the midfielder knows what to do. They just have to be ready for what they do. It's kind of the same thing like being lead singer of a band, a seven-piece band. You've got to, if you're going to be out there singing out front and mostly having your back to the rest of the group, or they're on the sides, you're not looking at them. You're not turning your back to the audience to watch what they do. You just have to trust that they're in the right place at the right time and they know what to do, right?
You know, I like the soccer analogy. I'm a soccer player.
Okay.
In fact, I just got home from a soccer game 25 minutes ago. So
there you go.
But you know, I'm a midfielder, so it's kind of I'm used to pulling the strings. I'm the guy connecting with everyone. But certainly, that's funny. I like doing this sometimes. It's like, who's the striker? Probably my trumpet player. Who's the drummer's definitely the goalkeeper. You know, it's like,
that's right.
So I think at the same time, I think it's a little different because of my role in this band, which is, more than just lead singer. I'm writing the arrangements, I'm writing the songs, I'm managing the band. So I'm kind of pulling a lot more strings than just lead singing. I've been in bands with just lead singer, and that is kind of the role. It's like your job is to support that person, let them shine. Same thing with a striker in soccer. It's like that person feeds off pure confidence, and confidence is magic. And when they feel like they can score goals, they're going to score goals. When they feel like they can't score goals, they're not going to score any goals. Same thing with the front person. If they feel like they're a star, they're going to be a star.
Right.
Which is why you kind of got to cater to that talent. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, the role is a little different. I'm playing more of a midfield role in this band, I would say.
All right. I don't know. Having seen the videos, I don't entirely agree with that, but that may be your soccer mindset that you're
maybe it's downplaying the lead singerness.
It may just be, you know, you're just a humble guy. That's all it is.
Maybe not. Yeah. I try to be.
So tell me about the type of music you're playing, because with a seven piece, when you're on stage, it seems like, from what I'm hearing. And I haven't had the benefit of seeing you live on stage other than in the videos, and I've listened to The King and the Clown, but it seems like you could make a step to the left or a step to the right and be a completely different type of outfit. You could be like just a straight rock and roll outfit that's just got a little bit of a jazzy or a swingy kind of a feel.
Well, that's kind of what the ensemble is about. Well, no. I mean, that's, you kind of hit it right on the head. You nailed it. Which is that we want to take you on a journey. And I think these days with people who have iPhones and iPods, they have 20,000 songs in their iPod. They put it on shuffle, and a jazz song is followed by a rock song, followed by a hip hop song. We're trying to take various elements of these things, and it's kind of like fusion cooking. You know, like, let's see how, you know, a little salsa is going to fit with a little hip hop. It's going to fit with like a rock pop chorus. And we do try to keep that kind of pop centered, you know, try to keep it focused around a catchy song. But, you know, there's elements, you know, I've got the record right here. There's elements of, you know, reggae. There's elements of Dixieland, big band, indie rock. But we still try to keep focused around one singular goal, which is blending those elements of those genres, and just keeping it about what's serving the song. And I think having the ensemble helps keep that. If I know that I'm working with the same seven-piece ensemble, I can bring different styles in, and it's still going to sound like that band because it's the same people and the same instrumentation. But, you know, I am, it's, and I also like seeing what does a jazz musician sound like playing rock and roll? What does a rock musician sound like playing, you know, jazz mixed with reggae? It's a fun experiment.
We were talking before we went on live that you're a New Yorker. You're living in Brooklyn. Do you think that influences the fact that you have so many different sounds that you're including?
Yeah, I mean, I think absolutely. I think New York is such a melting pot. You go out and you can. You hear all types of languages. You're seeing all different types of people. I'm hearing all different types of music, whether it's live music or just, you know, walking down the streets, hearing what's coming out of the bodega or what's coming out of the restaurant or the laundromat. You know, you're hearing all different types of music. All these sounds are swirling in your head, and that kind of filters through the music to a certain extent.
And did the band sound? And you mentioned you've been in other bands. Did the Nat Osborne band sound come fully formed? Did you have a specific idea of what it was going to be, or has it evolved over time into what it is now?
That's another really good question. I think it's
you get paid to make music. I get paid to make up words and sentences. It's just, you know, we'll roll with that.
Cool. Well, cheers. I think The actual answer to that goes a little further back. There was a predecessor to the Nat Osborne Band, which is a band called Nat Osborne and the Diamond Allegory, which was me kind of playing with all these different, a lot of the same songs, a lot of the same elements, but it was a little more eclectic, and it hadn't really worked out the kinks to a certain extent. And I always knew that was a temporary band, which is why I picked a name like Nat Osborne and the Diamond Allegory, which is a mouthful, and I was like, got to pick a name I'm not going to stick with. When my producer approached me saying he wanted to make this record, we kind of dove into the songs, tore them apart, put them back together, got some new musicians involved, and through the process of recording the album, the band came to be. So a lot of the people who played on the album entered the band, entered the fold. We changed the arrangements a little bit, and that's how the Nat Osborne Band came about. I would say halfway through the record, when we were mostly done tracking the record, we switched to Nat Osborne Band. We had a definitive first performance at Rockwood Music Hall in New York with the Nat Osborne Band, and it was a new band. And since then, the band has continued to grow and evolve. The arrangements have changed a little bit. We've introduced some new songs, and it continues to grow. I think that's kind of the story of the Nat Osborne Band. That's where we are.
Well, you have accepted the challenge of playing a couple songs for us here on the interwebs, and I understand the first one is Yours Alone from the new album. Anything you want to tell us to set this up?
Yours Alone is one of the oldest songs in the repertoire, and I wrote it when we were still at war in Iraq, and it's a song about kind of loss of innocence. It's a song about soldier going off to war too young and not coming back the same, but it's not necessarily about Iraq. I think it's just about any soldier anywhere, and the loss of innocence. Should keyboard a little bit.
Cool.
Stand your ground, keep your line, give your flesh for the sake of your own kind. Your given name don't mean shit. All you are is a gun and an outfit. All you ever is yours and yours alone. Don't let them take it far from your home. Shave your head, ink your skin, beat the sweetness out from within. Green and black, cursed like gold, drive the greed that forged the Mongol. All you ever is yours and yours alone. Don't let them take it far from your own. Skulls for the shells back at your own. Cold-blooded killer with a hot, steady hand. Sacrifice humanity to feel more like a man. All you have is yours and yours alone. Don't let them take it far from your own. All you have is yours and yours alone. Take it from your own.
same. Now you're a shattered man. All you have is yours and yours alone. But don't let them take it far from you.
All right. Thank you very much. Very nice. Very nice. Now, what? Got to tell me what influenced that song, because there seemed to be like, I don't know, two or three very different things going on in there at different times.
That song was very subconscious. That's one of the songs that I just sat down and it kind of came out. Almost all of it, I'd say, like 70. I think I consciously wrote one verse. I was walking through Central Park, and this melody came. And to me, that melody kind of represents tradition. I don't know why, but it does. And this is, it comes right after, what comes right after it is the destruction. It's I don't know.
It sounded to me like you could be scoring a Woody Allen film, to tell you the truth.
I do score films, actually. I just had a film in Tribeca.
Really? What was that?
Yeah. It's called Exit Room. Actually, the video that we shot in, the videos that are up on YouTube in the Nomad Loft, the ones that you reference, was actually a barter. Production company shot those in exchange for me scoring a short film that they did. So the film is called Exit Room, and it's actually one of four films that is available, I think, online on the Tribeca site. Really cool, 10-minute short, dark, but really good.
Tell folks a little about yourself. I mentioned you're from New York, but what else should they know? Are there any musicians in the family?
Yes and no. I'm the first person to be crazy enough to try to pursue this as a profession. My mother was a journalist, but is a very talented amateur pianist and singer. My father is completely tone deaf, but is a great drummer. Funnily enough, my mother has no rhythm, and my father has no pitch memory. So I think I kind of got both met somewhere. I got both of their gifts, I hope. Both of my sisters are fantastic singers and musicians, but neither have chosen to pursue it as well. Anything else you'd like to know?
Well, I was just thinking, you know, you could get a show on MTV and call it The Osbournes without the E, right?
You'd be amazed at how many people ask me if I'm related to Ozzy. After looking at my name, I mean, Ozzy's name is has a U and an E. I mean, I would understand if I had an E and maybe, but two letters that I don't have. I've just gotten in the habit of telling yes. I say yes, and I tell them that every Thanksgiving we get together and we eat live bats. That's what we do in the Osbourne family. And you'd be amazed at how many people stay with me through that. They're like, oh my God, really? You eat bats?
First thing I've taught my daughter as a teenager, people is dumb. Start from the assumption that people is dumb and they will never disappoint you. And that'll probably be the last thing I ever do publicly. Thank you very much. Bye, everybody.
People is gullible. Well, why don't we leave it at that?
I don't know. Do you drive a car? People is dumb.
I do drive a car. I drive a car in New York.
People is dumb. It's, you know. Anyway, so, you know, had you ever thought about doing anything besides?
I studied history in college, but I didn't have the attention span. I think going into academia was off the table. No, it was kind of always going to be music. I mean, I knew that early on. I think I shied away from it. Really know how to pursue it. I didn't know what that involved. And then when I graduated college and I came to New York, I just realized more and more, I was like, it has to be this, and I'm going to do this 150%, and I'm going to make it happen, and that's it. So I think that's kind of the most important decision. And once you make that decision, everything gets easier. You know, it's okay to be broke. It's okay to be, you know, eating rice and beans because you're doing what you love, and I think it's worth it.
Let's talk about songwriting for a little bit. Some people have a very natural gift for it. They get it without studying it and, you know, making it a focus that way. Do you come by it that naturally? Have you studied songwriting, or do you study songwriters? You know, how do you come to that?
I have never studied songwriting. I've had an aversion towards studying it, other than finding my favorite records and listening to them on repeat. I do try to read about my favorite songwriters. I was recently reading a Dylan biography and listening to his whole discography as I went through the book. And I've done that with Quincy Jones, and I've done that with Stevie Wonder, Paul Simon, although I can't seem to find a definitive biography of Paul Simon. I don't know if there's one out there.
That's a good point. Boy, that would be a good book, too.
Yeah, and it would probably sell really well, because there's probably a lot of people like me out there who would buy it in a heartbeat. That's kind of how I've learned. I think it's always been natural. I think of any gifts that I've been blessed with, songwriting is probably the most natural. I think the best songwriters don't think about how to do it too much. I think they just kind of think about what the song needs and deliver that. That being said, I think there are tricks of the trade and tools for the craft and things you can learn. And I think certainly some of the best songwriters know those. And I think you can study it to a certain extent, but I never wanted to academicize it, because I think you dull it a little bit. I think songwriting has to be so honest that people can see right through if you're thinking, oh, I should do this with the song. That becomes blatantly apparent to the people who is dumb, I think. I think it's just an innate human reaction when you hear something that's honest and is heartfelt. I think everyone reacts to that. And I think people might not realize when they're turned off by songwriting that feels forced, but I think they are to a certain extent. So.
It's funny. I make my living as a writer. I know people think, what, you don't make your living as Mr. Media? That's shocking. But so I make my living as a writer, whether it's articles or magazine pieces, mostly books. I've done some script writing, things like that. The one element of writing that I have never been able to understand is writing music, whether it's the music or lyrics. And I'm so envious of my 16-year-old daughter who, at like 11 or 12, had been taking piano for several years and just suddenly thought, she sat down and she just started writing. I mean, she would put the, she did the notes, she did the whole thing, and she started composing. And it kills me that she can do that so naturally. If I could do that, I'd put all this aside and I'd do that nonstop. And it just, it kills me that a kid of mine has that talent, and it's the one area of writing that I have never been able to do, and I'm so envious of people who are able to do that. So that's why I ask. I'm always interested in that.
Well, good for her. You should foster that courage. I'm sure you do.
Try.
As a creative person.
Yeah, it's easy. You know, it's easier for outsiders when it comes to teenagers. Easier for other people to influence things like that. So,
Actually, if how old is she? 16.
Yeah.
She'll probably be telling her, "Don't ever write music," and she'll probably write tons of music.
You know, it's so silly. You're right. I should be telling her the opposite of what I really wanted to do.
At that age, I think that's the most effective way to go about it.
I'm going to start doing that today. I'm going to start with.
If I catch you playing any more music, so help me God.
Any of that? Goddamn! Never mind. I'm trying to think. How did Springsteen refer to it? He talked to his father quoted. I don't want to hear any more of that goddamn rhythm. Anyway. I mentioned Springsteen, which is a good way to segue to this. The other song you're going to play is a song called Little to the Left. And before I knew you were going to play it, I had made a note to ask you about it, because for me listening to it, it made me think of Billy Joel. both in the music and in the lyrics. Actually, there was a time, and I'm going to draw a complete blank here. You probably do better than me in thinking of the songs, but there's several songs he was writing during a period of his career. This sounded like it would fit in very naturally. That now I don't know if I've complimented you or insulted you, so I'll let you go.
Brilliant! He's a fantastic songwriter.
So it was a compliment.
Definitely. I think any piano-based, you know, singer-songwriter doing, you know, like bluesy-tinged pop is going to get the Billy Joel reference, I think. But you know, he's a name because he was one of the best at it for sure. I think there's going to be a Billy Joel revival. I think he kind of fell out of the culture a little bit, but he's so talented, and some of those songs are so timeless that I think he's going to get his resurgence.
It's a shame he stopped composing, frankly. It's shocking that he stopped composing. He's still out playing, but it's different not putting new product out there, I think, to keep your catalog alive.
I think he was driven by so much. I think he was fueled by so much. He had such a tumultuous circumstances. And I think now he's like rich, fat, and happy. And he's like, what the hell is there to write about?
Well, I know when Christie Brinkley was in my life making me miserable, it was my most fruitful time of life. Yeah.
Best articles then, yeah.
Yeah. Boy, I sure do miss that girl. anything we should know about Little to the Left before you...
Just that this song is not particularly about any one person. People are always like, who's it about? Who's that song? It's like, it's not about anyone, it's about everyone. It's about everyone who I... It's about a particular type of person and a type of girl in my generation a lot of whom live in Brooklyn, who I'm surrounded by. So... Okay. I think it's about a good-hearted, very liberal person who doesn't maybe realize when they're contradicting themselves all the time.
Well, folks, how about this? Nat Osborne, Ozzy's other son, performing Little to the Left from the new album King and the Clown.
She's got teardrops tattooed to her eyes, but I've known her for a while now, and I've never seen her cry. And she loves to wear leather, and she hates when I eat meat. She's a hardcore hippie vegan with snakeskin on her feet. Where she drives a jeep to rally. Tell people about her. She swears by solar panels, and she leaks on all the lines. Yeah, but for all her contradictions, always still love her today. 'Cause she's always had her head turned on, just a little to the left. Yeah, she's always had her head turned on, just a little to the left. Oh, and I should tell her, but I don't have the heart. And I should tell her, but I don't know star. She smells like patchouli. She ain't showered in a week. With her ripped jeans, I designed her for the made to look cheap. But for all her contradictions, always still love her to death. 'Cause she's always had her head turned on, just a little to the left. Yes, and I should tell her, but I don't have the heart.
but they gotta eat. And she knows that Homo Joe down on Hemp Street, he ain't got no teeth. Yeah. And she's sort of sweet. Still she works and then he travels to lands where love is all. And she leaves out the detail at a hotel at 5 stars. Yeah, before all the contradictions, always still living a day. Always had an instrument, just a little to the left. And yeah, she's always had an instrument, just a little to the left. She's always had, always had an instrument, just a little.
Unfortunately, I just got a call. Hold on a second. Uh-huh. Billy Joel wants his song back. He said, Hobo Joe, he says it's a little too close to home for him. No, that was great. Thank you.
It's actually Hobo Joel. No, I'm just kidding.
That's good. That's good. Let's with a couple more writing. I know this is something that the most
music, but the best songs come together. I find when the inspiration comes, when that thread comes, if they don't come together, I'm probably not going to finish the song. If I just have a melody idea, it becomes, because if I'm sitting there writing like very consciously, it just becomes stale. The best songs I write, I just kind of sit down, shut my brain off and just play, and it just comes out. And those are the best songs. Those are the ones that I end up keeping the most honest, the most inspired. And so I do sometimes write lyric ideas down. Often when I'm on the subway, I'll just be thinking, I'll write it down. But it's rare that I go back and am able to turn those into songs. It's also rare that if I just come up with a ditty, that I'll go back and finish the whole song. So it's generally whole thing at the same time.
Hmm. Well, that anticipated the second part of the question, which was, you know, could you, because I know you said you sit down at the keyboard and will write, but I wondered if you'll write anywhere, if you'll scribble things down, and apparently no, it really only works for you if you're at the keyboard and you're doing the whole thing together for the most part.
Not necessarily, actually. I often find when I'm walking, I get into a rhythm. It's kind of, songs just come when I shut off my conscious brain. So when I'm not thinking about like, what do I have to eat today? Who do I need to email? What do I need? It's like, if I'm just walking and once my mind starts wandering, it just comes.
And do you play any other instruments besides keyboard?
I do. I play guitar. I play bass. I play a little drums. But I would say piano and guitar are the main instruments. I have another band called Hawthorne. It's a folk band, and I only play guitar in that band. I kind of split the two bands based upon the two instruments that I play. I write more folky, I write more folk songs on guitar, and I write more kind of jazzy, adventurous pop explosions on piano. So they're the two different bands.
Now, nobody's going to see this, Nat, so tell me, which band is the Cool Kids and which is, never mind. never mind.
That'd be like, that's like Sophie's Choice.
Oh, yeah. All right, so last question. So the album is out. People can get it, I assume, in all the usual places.
It's up on iTunes. It's up on CD Baby if you want the physical copy. Right. And we also sell them at shows. Cool. So,
and you guys are touring. You're out doing some shows now.
I'm playing tonight in New York. I'm playing on Thursday in Wilmington, Delaware. In May, we're getting up. We're going playing a festival in New Jersey. We're playing in Portland, Maine on the 17th. So we're moving. We're getting around. I'm putting together dates this summer, trying to get as far west as Chicago, as far south as Nashville. So
that's not far enough. Come to Tampa.
Well, hey, I would love to. That's cool.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find the Nat Osborne Band's new album, The King and the Clown, as he said, at great online retailers, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. If you're watching the video on the Mr. Media page, just below us, you'll see the image of the album. You can just click on it right now. I mean, right this minute. You don't even have to stop watching us. You can just move your mouse, click on it. It'll take you to a great price at Amazon.com. You can own it, download it, or have it sent to you physically. Either way, it's yours. Nat, your website is natosborne.com, and I'm going to spell it. You correct me if I get it wrong. NatOsborn.com.
That's it. Also, check out Facebook. Give us a like on Facebook. Just facebook.com/NatOsborneMusic.
All right. And from the website, people can watch the videos. Is there a separate channel on YouTube?
It is. But if you just look, go to YouTube and look up Nat Osborne Band, they'll be the first ones that come up. We got a couple things, but the two Nomad Loft videos are the two best.
And folks, next time you see a picture of Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne, just look in the background for Nat to be photobombing them, because they try to pretend he's not one of their kids, but, you know, we all know that's not true.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. You brought it up. Nat, thank you so much, not only for being on the show, but performing the songs, and it was great to get to know you, and continued good luck.
Likewise. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We'll see you next time.
Thousand Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media Radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest 2-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Mark Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/MrMedia. That's stitcher.com/MrMedia. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com. And tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.